We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with Trollo and Dibs. Turn the game on, bump up the volume. It's time to play ball with Trollo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
The always crucial hour number four, Trollo and Dibs. Oh yeah, Hurricane, bring it. John Dickinson, Jim Cozumore, and Trollo and Dibs. They have the extended holiday weekend off. We say thank you for listening to 95.7 The Game. Download the radio.com app. Take Trollo and Dibs anywhere you are. Use the rewind feature. It is fantastic. We have had a busy day today. And here heading into hour number four, we're going to stay busy, JD, because we're going to bring in our good friend. Everyone remembers him from his time with the Giants as the general manager. Bobby Evans joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Bobby, Jim Cozumore, John Dickinson here. I hope you and your family are staying safe, buddy. How are things going for the Evans family?
Hey, good morning. No, we're doing fine. We, you know, I think the kids really miss their friends and school and the activities and a lost baseball season for my son's high school team and my daughter's middle school basketball team and another number of other things. But they're doing well. I mean, it's certainly a transition and a lot of time together, which we're certainly taking advantage of.
Oh, that's good. That's so sad, though. You're right. The kids who are missing out on seasons and graduations and whatever it happens to be, you're absolutely right. Let's talk a little Major League Baseball right now as they try to find a way to maybe come back. One of the things that is squirted out about this is that maybe, just maybe, they might decide to use the designated hitter in the National League. If from your time, and you're a National League guy, but from your time, do you have a stance on the DH and whether or not you'd like to see it in the National League?
I'll tell you, I've been so biased for so long. I mean, just never wanting to go that route. But the momentum, you know, really even before this spring training, the momentum in the game is shifting, you know, more and more towards, you know, baseball going to a universal DH in both leagues. And so I think it's not surprising that coming back, you know, into a half season here in 2020, that they wouldn't try the DH to protect the pitching. And I wouldn't be surprised if it sticks long term. I personally love the pitcher hitting, but I understand it, you know, the game and the nature of the game now is we have, you know, so much interleague play. It's getting harder and harder to keep it with the pitcher hitting.
Bobby, just from a general perspective, I know this is a very open-ended question I'm going to hit you with, but what an undertaking to try and put together any kind of a plan for anybody in Major League Baseball and then the decisions the players have to make and then decisions that a management team and a front office would have to make. What is this like right now as they try to, you know, figure things out, and what an astronomical, unbefore-seen undertaking is it all?
Well, it's got to be incredible. I mean, I just the medical procedures, and it was an 80-page report for the Players Association to look at, and I'm sure that'll get modified repeatedly before it ever gets executed. But you know, the medical side of this is, you know, priority number one: the safety and health of the players and the coaches and the medical staff and front offices that'll be working. Ultimately, hopefully, the safety of fans if they're ever able to open up the ballparks at some point this year. And so that alone is a big project. But then ultimately, you know, the players' health on the field. I mean, they've had a spring training. Now they've shut down. Now they're trying to restart. You know, the chance of injury just gets, you know, exponentially harder to manage. And so that's another set of issues. I mean, you've got a playoff structure. You've got, you know, what point in the season are you picking up? Are you going to adjust it, adjust the schedule just from the midpoint on, or are you going to recreate a whole new schedule? I'm sure, which is what it sounds like based on which teams will be playing each other. Are you playing in your home park? You got spring training opening up in home cities. You got some spring training opening up in their Florida or Arizona homes. The issues are unbelievable, not to mention the revenue and the challenges of the losses of these clubs, the payroll of what the players will be end up getting. I mean, the number of issues is incredible. And meanwhile, if you're a general manager, you're focused on the draft because that's coming up really fast.
Wow. There's a lot going on. Bobby Evans joining us, 95.7 The Game. You know, to compare it to another sport, I don't know if that's fair or not, but in the NBA, we see players having conference calls and trying to push towards playing in some way, shape, or form. And on the baseball side, it's a different tone that we're hearing. Now, I'm not questioning whether or not players should be concerned about safety or what money they're going to get, but it just seems like there's a different tenor towards trying to get on the field and how that happens. In your experiences, is this all just part of the negotiation process of the players and the Players Association trying to make sure they get what they need from the MLB side, or is there a true animus between the two in which it can be extremely difficult to try to ever come to a fix for whatever the future could look like?
I have confidence. I mean, we have good leadership on both sides of the table, and we have a commitment to the game and the fans. I can't imagine a scenario where they don't come to an agreement. I can understand a scenario where they don't come to an understanding because of health issues or the lack of testing or the lack of procedures that they feel comfortable executing. But I don't believe for a minute that they won't come to an agreement from a financial standpoint because there's just too much at stake. They all love the game too much, and there's way too much good leadership to not come to a resolution. I think they're going to come to something soon. I just hope it's feasible with the health crisis.
Bobby, I know you're a historian of the game, and when you think of how this season, let's just say 82 are played, but the groupings and the divisions are completely different from anything we've seen before. The playoff format's going to be different if it happens than anything we've seen before, it sounds like. I mean, I'm asking you to look ahead and almost like, how do you think this is going to be remembered? And maybe are there going to be things other than maybe the DH that are taken from this season if it winds up being somewhat successful considering the circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be, you know, definitely remembered uniquely. I mean, I right now we don't know if there's some players that won't play for various health reasons or health concerns, but for the most part, just getting teams back on the field will be, you know, so popular and so enormously important. I think that the changes will probably get lost in this season. But if they do carry on like the DH or like a mechanical umpire behind the plate instead of you have the computerized strike zone, if you will, that determines strikes, some of those things are definitely going to have an impact on the game. But I think that you're going to have to use this as a testing ground for opportunities to improve our game. But unfortunately, some of these things are being forced upon us, and they may not be well received long term. But in the short term, they're going to be necessary. But just getting back on the field is so important. For I think the game. I don't think it's good for the game to sit out a whole season. I mean, it's just unless it's necessary. I mean, ultimately, if it's necessary, you have to. But they need to be back on the field if they can soon.
Bobby Evans joining us, 95.7 The Game. I want to piggyback off that because we've talked about maybe DH in the National League, maybe an electronic strike zone or different umpiring. Maybe it's realignment. And is there a belief within the Major League Baseball side, is there a camp of guys who think, you know, we kind of do have to change some things, that we do have to have a different view of how our game is played, that maybe this could usher in a time when this is almost experimental, in which they wouldn't have had that format before, because there's also this faction of of maybe executives who say, we don't need to change our game. Our game has been surviving for over a century. It continues to do well. Look at our TV dollars and the contracts that we're signing with these TV networks. Is this a chance maybe, Bobby, for baseball to rethink its product? And what is the force behind that? Are there enough people willing to rethink the product to find out if there is a way to improve upon the sport?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of momentum in the game to, you know, to look differently at certain parts of the game, the rules, the alignment. I mean, some of it is just logistical. I mean, the amount of travel that players are put through over the course of a season, you know, and yet you have, you know, the chance to for West Coast teams could conceivably stay more west during the season and play more games with teams on the West Coast, likewise for the East Coast, and that alone would lessen travel and make the 162 game schedule less grueling. But there's some that would say 154 game schedule makes more sense. You know, clearly the expansion of rosters is always coming up. We're seeing, you know, the nature of the DL shifting from 15 days to 7 days. You know, we're seeing a major shift right now, you know, in what they're talking about relative to the whole minor league system. I mean, we've looked at the way the minor leagues have operated for forever, and now we're seeing a major shift where perhaps a reduction in the number of teams, trying to get West Coast teams more West Coast minor league teams, and where right now, as the Giants, they have two on the East Coast and the rest on the West Coast, other than the team in the Dominican as well. So, yeah, there's a shift geographically in the minor leagues as well. And so I think this is definitely an opportunity. It's unfortunate circumstances, but a lot of this was coming to a head anyway. I mean, with the technology in the game, the advanced level of information that clubs have, the advancement of, you know, minor league and major league minor or spring training facilities, all the technology is available there. Sometimes when you leave and go to a minor league affiliate, you know, those amenities are not even close to what you have at your complex. So there's a lot of stirring in the game right now. And I think this, unfortunate circumstances are pushing the calendar on some of those items.
Bobby, a big part of our culture during the shelter in place and everything was the Last Dance documentary about the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan, and it leads me to thinking about some of the local teams, thinking about the Warriors during their championship run here and going to the finals 5 years in a row, the last 5 years, the 49ers of the 80s, but your guys' run 2010, 12, and 14. Could you imagine a documentary about your run, and who would star in it, and how would it be constructed?
Well, yeah, I think you'd have to put, you know, Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner at the forefront of that. But even Bruce Bochy is a great part of that story too, just as, you know, his history in the game. You know, Brian Sabian is the architect. I mean, you know, there's so many great, you know, angles that you could take. I mean, this ownership group, you know, saving the club from leaving, and then, you know, building a new ballpark, and obviously the great run, you know, those three championships. There's a lot of stories that could be told, and, you know, there's always, you know, it's always interesting to look at each of those World Series championships had, you know, three different closers, two different first basemen, two different shortstops, you know, a number of different starters. I mean, you know, really, you know, the 10 World Championship was more Lincecum, the 12 championship was more Matt Cain, and the 14 championship was more Madison Bumgarner from a starter perspective. Those were the forefront leaders of those rotations. So it's interesting how different the rosters could be at times and evolving over those three championships. Yet they weren't that far apart. Yet, you know, when you look at the Last Dance and you look at Michael Jordan just as a central figure, it's hard to replicate that, but I mean, those are some of the characters I think that could be talked about.
Man, it is neat to think about that when you lay it out the way you do, Bobby. Thanks for doing that. Good question, JD. Way to go, Bobby. We know it's everyone's got family obligations, but we want to thank you for joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Just going over some of this baseball stuff and the direction. Do you think, in your heart of hearts, you think we're going to see baseball this year?
I just can't imagine that we won't, other than, you know, the variable that is uncontrollable, which is, the health crisis that we're facing. And nobody wants to do anything that would be unsafe for players or those around them, including staff and coaches, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, as long as the health element could be handled, yes, I think we absolutely will see baseball and hopefully, NBA and hopefully even college football and the NFL uninterrupted. I mean, let's hope. I mean, that's what our people are rooting for. But, the dynamic when you talk about health, I mean, we none of us have a handle on that. I mean, we're very fortunate. We've come through this, in a much better state than we expected, given the predictions early on. But still, horrific amount of loss around the world, including in our own country. So we've got to do what's right. But if possible, I can't imagine baseball not, coming back this season, especially again if they're able to, mitigate the risks.
What any way, shape, or form, we certainly hope that's true. Bobby, thanks for joining us. We hope you and your family stay safe, and we hope to see you at a ballpark or a football game or a basketball game sometime soon. Anything.
Likewise. Amen to that. You got it.
I like it. Thanks, Bobby.
Okay. Talk to you guys.
Bobby Evans joining us here on 95.7 The Game. JD, that was an awesome question about, the Last Dance, and then you look at there is a comparison there. Because I do think, this is my opinion, that the Giants' three championships are not respected enough around Major League Baseball and amongst, I think, of just the average baseball fan. I do look at that stretch as a dynastic stretch of baseball for modern times. I don't know how you look at it, but I think that would be an intriguing view of an organization and what they did at a particular time that was just, it was awesome what they did.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I mean, I think it's been cast, over time, and look, it's only been 6 years since the last one, but I think as time has gone on and you've gotten, further removed from the first one, and now 10 years away from that, I do think it's cast as well. It's rare that a team that does it multiple times gets cast as well. They were lucky. Well, they weren't that good. Like, usually you can get away with that. You win one, okay, then that's kind of how it is. But when you win two and then you win three, at some point, the greatness should probably be acknowledged. And I do think on a grand scheme, I think those teams are beloved locally at that level, surely, by fans. And maybe baseball is just more of a local sport. But I'm with you. Coz, I think it is underappreciated in the grand scheme what those teams were able to do.
And when the way Bobby laid it out, coaches, whether it's Boach, each particular team had a particular different leader at the pitching side. I mean, they did kind of build three different championship teams, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, he laid it out. They had a different second baseman every time. They had a different center fielder every time. They had a different closer every time. And of the big three of Lincecum, Kane, and Bumgarner, each one was the ace, basically, for each one of the runs. Yeah. So that's very different. I also look at it into this context, and look, I think, the Warriors were by far the more dominant team when you compare them to the Giants, but let's say 20 years from now, the Warriors don't win another title and the Giants don't win another title, and you're looking back and, hey, the Warriors won 3 out of 4. And got to a fifth, and the Giants, won 3 out of 5, and you, to know it, the Warriors were more dominant. But as time goes on, I mean, I think those two probably will be viewed as more equal than people think, because the Warriors didn't ultimately win a fourth one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think what the Giants did, and there's recency bias, the Warriors were the next ones to do it, not that they Bigfoot anybody, but it's the one most on our minds. But what the Giants did was just incredible.
Yeah, and they did it in a more dominant, swagalicious fashion, the Warriors did. So I think that there is some value to that. But it's interesting, the comparisons. It's like, well, one was just, dominant, greatest of all time. The other was, well, they got lucky three times.
Yeah, I know a lot of organizations.
No, it's not true. The club I grew up rooting for took 108 years to get lucky to win one. So, you know, let's try to put it into some normal perspective. Part of the conversation with Bobby Evans, we started to talk about baseball enacting certain things during this time that might, now you could say might enhance the game. Others might say it takes away from the game. But whether it's the National League DH or the electronic umpires or it's realignment, are those things, are you... Hey, I'm all for baseball experimenting with their game to see if they can improve it. Or are you, I'm old school guy, don't touch my game. I want it to be the way it is.
No, I'm open-minded with things like the schedule. I'm open-minded. Not so much realignment, yes, but changing leagues. And you know, I know there's been some thought of, well, you're going to go to an all-West Coast league where the Dodgers and, now let's say the Dodgers and the Angels and the Giants and the A's and the Padres and the Mariners and the Diamondbacks
are going to all be in
one league together.
I like it.
Or in one division together. I'm not really a fan of that.
Okay.
But as far as tweaking the schedule and maybe playing more games in certain, you know, areas to make it a little less taxing, I get that. I'm open-minded on the DH for this year, I think, has to happen. I don't know that I'd want to see that permanently, although I think that is where it's going and they're going to use this year as a means to get it in. So I'm open-minded with some of the rule things. And the schedule, but I don't want to see wholesale, you know, all right, you know, forget about the American and the National League forever. And like, I don't want to see the Giants and the A's, let's say, in the same division. I know a lot of people do, but I wouldn't.
Interesting. Would you be all for 30 baseball teams, right? Not 32. 32 football teams, 30 baseball teams. Would you be all for 1 through 15 in the American League, 1 through 15 in the National League? You don't have divisions at all. And, you know, the top, what do they have it now in baseball? The top six teams make it? The top four teams
five.
Make it? Five teams? Five teams
yeah.
make it?
Three division, you know, winners, two wild cards, and then they have the one play-in.
Yeah. So would you rather have just, you know, 1 through 15 in the American, 1 through 15 in the National, and those top five teams make it, or do you like the divisional system of the way it breaks out?
I like the divisional system. I'll say this. The one thing that is going to happen, I think, out of this is I do think we're going to end up with expanded playoffs. Like, I think that's
oh,
going
no
to
question.
Be one. Like, that
yeah.
will be, like, it's going to happen this year because of the short year, but I think that will be, that will just continue. The you know, you're going to have maybe one team get a bye, and you're going to have, you know probably six teams in each league get, you know, play some semblance of a division series, maybe a best of three or something like that, or a tiered play-in where you get a couple of elimination games at the top, and then they feed into a tournament maybe 3 or 4 days after the season ends or 5 days after the season ends, kind of like what you see now. That's the one thing. And I don't know how – I'd have to see how they do it before I really have an opinion on it, but I do think that's something that you will see come of this in baseball. The two things for sure that it looks like, one is the DH, you know, in both leagues – moving beyond 2020. The other one I would bet is playoff expansion. I'll bet playoff expansion takes and hits and continues beyond this year.
We saw the NFL expand by adding some teams to their playoff. The NHL, their board, their executive board of directors are voting on a 24-team playoff for this season. You're absolutely right. I could absolutely see an additional grouping of teams in a playoff structure that changes baseball. And I'm a believer in what Joe Fortenbaugh has said on this very show. Once they put it into effect, even as an experimental fashion, they ain't taking it out. They ain't taking it out. Once the DH is in, it's staying. Once they add a couple of teams to the playoffs, they're going to do it in the future. And that's just the way things go. All right, when we continue, you know, Bobby Evans even mentioned, hey, we'd love to see college football up and running. Well, the commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, is going to join us, and we're going to pick his brain on the process, what they're going through. What are they, you know, how do they handle the spring sports that didn't even happen? How are they looking at the football season upcoming? If there is no football, how do they pay for the other sports that are on the docket? That's all straight ahead. Joe Lowndes, Jim Cozumel, and John Dickinson with Larry Scott next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowndes, starring Jim Cozumel.
Bang, bang, Niner gang.
On 95.7 The Game.
Love the Bang, Bang, Niner gang. JD and Coz with you. Coming down the home stretch here, 95.7 The Game. Make sure you download the radio.com app. You have Joe Low and Dibs everywhere you go. Straight ahead after us, what do we got? We have Bonte Steiny and the Goo are all coming up after us. JD, is that what we've got today?
I believe so. Full slate, all three of them.
I'm starting to tingle.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Hell yeah!
We are anticipating hearing from Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12. We know a lot. There are a lot of moving parts throughout the day for everybody going on. We certainly hope to tap in with him. And I'll be honest with you, JD, I like college football. I like it more and more as I get older. And when I heard the SEC was going to come back and play, I was intrigued by that. But I was, you know, trying to do a little homework for this. And the SEC is pretty open by saying they don't want to be the only conference that plays. They want everyone to come back and play, and they want to have full seasons, and they want to have their bowl seasons. And as we have the conversation, we're now joined by the commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, joins us here on 95.7 The Game. I am Jim Cozumel. John Dickinson is here. Larry, thanks for joining us. I hope you and the family are staying safe right now during these crazy times. Nope, I thought we had Larry. Maybe we're still trying to hook up with him. So, JD, anyway, getting back to the SEC, how they're hoping to have their college football season. It looks like the SEC is saying they're ready to go. Where do you stand with the colleges? Are you excited that they're coming back? Where do you stand that at least the SEC has said they're going to come back and play their season?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, the dynamic of, you know, when will students be allowed to be generally on campus? I mean, to me, that's the big part of this, because you're going to create an interesting dynamic where are college football players going to be allowed to? And I know in a lot of the SEC schools, they are in states where, you know, they're in better position maybe than other states as far as, you know, allowing some semblance of normalcy to return, because they're at different points in their, you know, ability to ramp things up. But I think that's the just, you know, fascinating dynamic for me is, you know, when can these other schools start having, you know, kids back on campus as students, but also to work out. It's a complicated issue for sure.
All righty. I believe we have got the commissioner of the Pac-12 back with us now. Larry Scott joining us on 95.7 The Game. Jim Cozumel and John Dickinson with you. And Larry, again, thank you very much. We know it's a crazy time for everybody. Thanks for giving us a couple of minutes of your time. I hope you and the family are staying safe during these crazy times.
Thanks for asking. Yes, we're doing fine, and it is crazy, but I'm happy to be with you.
Well, Larry, you have got one of the most difficult decisions facing you and the conference as you move forward, as we inch closer and closer towards a potential college football season. We know the SEC said that they are up and running. Can you at least help us with the mechanics of how you will be a part of making this decision for the Pac-12 as far as how you will handle the football season for the fall year here in 2020?
Certainly, yes. Now, there's a lot of layers, and can understand why it can be confusing. Look, first and foremost, we're going to be guided by health and safety, and public health officials have the ultimate role in all this. Our governors and county and other public health officials are going to ultimately give the green light or not as to whether our campuses can not only be open, but have students and student-athletes back on campus, let alone competing. So that's the first layer. Beyond that, all the conferences together, all the major conferences together, are going to have to be involved in the decision about the college football season. And right now, our plan is that we're going to be starting on time, and we're going to play a full season, non-conference, conference, bowl games, the college football playoff, and there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic that we're on a nice glide path for that to happen, but it certainly means that public health officials will have to continue to be confident that that can happen and our medical experts are comfortable and all the conferences can align around that decision. What we also have to agree on nationally, and we pretty much have in principle, is for a six-week training camp leading up to the start of the season, which means sometime in late July, official team practices could start. And so those are all decisions that are going to get made nationally together, in my opinion, and we as a conference will act together on that. What happens between now and then is really going to be a state-by-state, school-by-school issue as to whether they feel comfortable and whether they're permitted to open up and allow student-athletes to start filtering back to campus on a voluntary basis to get the support that the campuses can provide, strength and conditioning training, voluntary workouts. And that'll be, I think, you know, a phased approach. But as we know, even in our own league, in the six states in the Pac-12, there are different policies state by state. So we've got some states that are ready to open where they're opening gyms and restaurants and retail. We've got other states that, including here in California, that are more restrictive and haven't gotten to that point yet. So we, over the next few days, I think you'll start to see announcements coming from the conferences. And, you know, I anticipate early next week we'll be making our decision as to when in June it'll be permissible for our schools to start allowing student athletes back on a phased basis for voluntary workouts. And each school in each state will have to make that decision based on the advice of the public health officials and the universities. And the primary motivation around this is to allow student athletes to be back in a safer environment with more support. As you can imagine, you know, we've got 7,000 student athletes in our conference, and there's a wide range of situations that they're in back at home. Some have access to facilities to be able to work out or at home or whatever, and others are in high-risk situations. So I think the concern has been, especially as states start opening up gyms and parks and whatnot, is it safer to allow folks to do that or to have them back in an environment where they've got great supervision, great medical support, and otherwise? So it's really, at a student-athlete welfare, I think we'll start allowing student-athletes back where it's permissible.
Larry, how tied together in the Pac-12, how tied together will it be to, let's say, play athletics in the fall and to have students on campus able to go to class in the fall? Are those two things tied together at all, or could there be athletics played in the fall while a campus, let's say, is online only, if that is where a particular university chooses to go? What are the dynamics of that?
Yeah, so we've had a lot of discussion. Yeah, I'd say it's preliminary in our league, but multiple discussions with our presidents and chancellors. And I think philosophically, we believe that it has to be safe enough to open a camp for campus to be open and to have some students back on campus in order for us to feel comfortable having student athletes back on campus. At the moment, all of our schools are working toward that, intending that, understanding that, you know, the new normal will be different from the old normal. Every school is thinking about hybrid models where they're allowing for social distancing and, of course, intense hygiene and protocols in place. You know, because no one's anticipating a vaccine, so protocols for when students, faculty, others, you know, have the virus, what you do about that. But all of our schools at the moment are intending to be open in some capacity and have some cohort of students back on campus. So that's what we're working toward. And if things keep progressing in a positive way, I'm pretty optimistic about it.
Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Larry, the big-ticket item is obviously football. Football pays for all the other sports. Spring sports this past year, it's so disappointing that for many of these athletes, these student-athletes who were preparing for a spring season, they weren't able to have it. How will the Pac-12 or how has the Pac-12 handled the spring season for these athletes, and will they ever get the opportunity to have that for some last chance to play their sport again?
Yeah, it's really been heartbreaking for a lot of student athletes. I was in Las Vegas at our men's basketball tournament when we had to make the very difficult decision after day one to cancel the tournament, and had a chance to visit with the Oregon team, who had won the Pac-12 regular season, to talk to them and present them a regular season trophy and all that. And just, you know, the vacant, confused, upset look in these young people's eyes, you know, knowing they were working toward a goal, and shed a lot of blood, sweat, and tears over the season to get to the point, you know, the peak of the season, and be able to play in the NCAA tournament, and that was all taken away, was really hard. And I've had a lot of other conversations with student athletes since then, and this has been, you know, no one's ever been through this, and it's a shock, and it's a trauma, and it's very disruptive, and I think people are dealing with it in different ways, not being up to go for their dreams. I think the NCAA has made a policy decision which I think is very compassionate towards student athletes, and which says that spring student athletes that did not get to complete their season are entitled to come back, including seniors, including student athletes for whom it was their last year. If they want to come back for another year, they have the eligibility. They'll be granted, you know, scholarship money. You know, every school will make their own specific decisions about how that works. But that option's available, which I'm really delighted about.
Larry, obviously, a big part of the college experience is, and I'll relate it back to college football, is being able to go to a college football game on one of the great, you know, campuses in the conference, and certainly other conferences around the country. Are you guys preparing as if things will have to be done 100% without fans at this point? I know you probably don't have a full answer on it, or is there hope that at some point in the coming months, there could be, you know, fans in the stands at some of these great venues?
Yeah, you know, missing sports right now, I think, has us all reflecting on the important role sports plays, you know, with the American psyche, and college football is such a uniquely American thing. It's just, you know, the fall is a great time of celebration and congregation and nostalgia and people coming together with passion. I think everyone's looking forward to college football starting up again and being able to be played. And, you know, we're working hard toward that. And, again, I think reason for optimism, if things stay on the current track, that that'll happen. The issue of fans is really a very different one. You know, a football team with the staff and the officials is a relatively small group. That's not hard to surveil and test and separate if there are issues. You know, you start talking about 50, 60, 70, 80,000 fans in a stadium. You know, that's what people are calling a mass gathering. I think that's it's a different ball of wax. And in the state reopening plans, a return to sport happens earlier than a return to fans being able to attend mass gatherings like sporting events, concerts, festivals, conventions, etc. So my expectation, if things keep on the glide path that they're on, is that, you know, we'll have a college football season, which will be a big, you know, boost to society in America and to these, you know, young people who are working hard toward it. But it'll be a real mixed bag within our conference and perhaps around the country in terms of whether there are fans in the stadium or not. I would expect at the moment, based on the guidance I've seen from different states, that we will have some states where there are no fans at first. We'll have some states where there will be limited numbers of fans allowed, and a gradual phase-in approach to allowing more and more fans during the season as things progress. And now, I don't expect this in our footprint, but in talking to my colleagues across the country, which I do every single day, there are some parts of the country, not on the West Coast, but some parts of the country where we'll have full stadium. That I don't think there'll be public policy that prevents it, and the mindset of the fans there will be they want to attend the college football game on a Saturday. and won't have the same concerns. So I think it's going to be a very interesting social experiment and public policy experiment to see when the NFL starts and when college football starts, you know, what the different markets look like in terms of fan attendance.
Couple more with Commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, as he joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Larry, since you've become commissioner, a big initiative that you've put forth with the Pac-12 is, and I'll use the phrase, an Asian initiative. You've played games in Australia. You've worked closely with the Chinese Sports Federation on different Olympic sports. Where does that initiative stand now with what the world has been affected by?
Yeah. Well, we don't know what it'll mean for this fall, where we've had an annual game in Shanghai to kick off our basketball season. This year, the University of Washington is supposed to play against Tulane to kick off the basketball season there. No decisions have been made, although we've been working with our partners on fallback plans in the event we're not comfortable traveling. Teams over there, you know, will play in the U.S., play the game in the U.S. But, you know, the global initiative is still an important one. All of our universities are, have a global footprint, have international students from all over the place, have a lot of research and other faculty exchange and academic programs with institutions in China. China is the largest population of foreign students at our universities. So for a lot of reasons, it's been an important tie and a great experience for the student athletes. But health and safety concerns will be first and foremost, and we have fallback plans in place if people aren't comfortable traveling.
And finally, we've seen other universities outside of your conference. They have had to shed certain sports. They just don't have the income for it. How important will getting football back to going, and are any of your schools in danger of maybe losing some of the Olympic sports?
There's a lot of nervousness out there right now because there's so much uncertainty, like, you know, society at large and the economy at large. As you point out, the key driver of athletics department revenue at all 12 of our schools is heavily, heavily weighted toward football, television income, but even more than that, our football ticket sales and associated donations that go along with that. I think even in a best-case scenario, like we've been talking about, where we have a full football season, it's pretty clear that certain states are not going to allow fans to come back, at least at the beginning of the season. So there's going to be a significant impairment to athletics department revenue. And if it winds up being worse than that and we can't play a full football season and it's abbreviated somehow, then it's going to be a much more significant financial impact. So we're having a lot of discussions with our campuses, and certainly within the campuses, as we talk to the CFOs of the campuses, athletics directors. There's a lot of scenario planning going on about how to, you know, survive the pandemic. As I mentioned, there's 7,000 student athletes supported across our 12 schools with scholarships and all the medical support and the facilities and the coaches and nutrition and all that. And those costs can't really be reduced. There's a commitment to the student athletes to support them, and the certain costs are fixed. So there's going to be hopefully temporary financial hardship that our university is going to have to figure out a way to get through. Long term, I think people, you know, still have hope and optimism that things at some stage will return to normal, and hopefully this is a temporary blip. So it's certainly my hope in that context that this pandemic and the economic impacts do not result in less sports, cutting of sports, and less opportunities for young people, because, you know, being a collegiate student athlete at one of our schools is an amazing opportunity, not just for the education, but a lot of financial and other support and opportunity that comes along with that.
Larry, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. I could talk sports, business, and the college side of things forever with you, and you're always gracious with your time. We hope you and your family stay safe during these times, and we all pray that we've got ourselves back to some normalcy in the fall, and we'll see you guys at the football field at some time in the very near future. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks very much for having me. Appreciate all that.
All right, there you have it. The great Larry Scott, Commissioner Pac-12. A lot going on there, JD, an awful lot going on in the Pac-12. Let me get some timing here. I'm going to talk to Steven. Steven, where are we right now show-wise? Let me know what I need to do. What do we have coming up here?
Well, you got Bonte, Steiny, and Guru coming up next in about 3 minutes.
All right, so we got 3 minutes to close it out. That was interesting, JD, especially that last answer. He didn't say that, you know, we're out of the woods yet. He said there are going to be some difficult times ahead. Hopefully they don't lose any sports in any of these Pac-12 schools. And I know, you know, that, listen, a lot of our audience, they want to talk about the Niners, they want to talk about the Warriors, and they want to talk about the Giants. But also there are a lot of graduates of Stanford, of Cal, of UCLA, of Oregon, who live in the area. And I know they have ties to these schools, and I'd certainly hope that none of those schools lose any of those opportunities for some of those student-athletes, because I do think that's all part of the college experience.
No question about it. Correct me if I'm wrong here. My takeaways from the interview are this. College football is going to be played as scheduled. Mm-hmm. Like, one, college football is going to be played as scheduled. Two, there's going to be parts of the country where they're going to have full stadiums and there will be no restrictions. Three, that's probably not going to be the Pac-12. You're going to see, in all likelihood, no fans, but then maybe as time goes on, there could be a certain percentage of fans allowed in. Is that fair? Or anything
I think that's
there?
You absolutely hit it on the head. And it's going to be interesting because on a football Saturday, we will see at 9 o'clock in the morning our time, because that's 12 noon of the East, an SEC game kicking off with 65,000 fans. And then by, you know, 3 in the afternoon our time, it could be UCLA and Oregon ready to, you know, strap the helmets on, and it's going to be crickets in the background because that's what the rules are saying in our particular region of the country. And you know what, JD? I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I don't think one has it. Yeah, I don't think one has it right and one has it wrong. I think each side is reading what they have, and that's the way they're going to go. I do find it interesting that, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, you asked the question. If they're going to play football, you have to have students in the classrooms, correct?
Yeah, that was, yeah, how closely tied are those two things? Do you have to have students in the classroom to play football? And he hinted to me that there's going to be students in the classroom on a large scale.
Which I find interesting because didn't the state schools in California say that they won't be going back, like the Sacramento States, the Fresno States?
Correct.
Those schools won't be going back?
Correct, for the fall semester.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, to make that call already in the UC schools, which may be different in that realm. Anyway, JD, this has been a wild 4 hours we've had. Didn't even feel like 4 hours today. Good job. You did the heavy lifting last night on the butcher shop with my man Chatsky, and thanks for carrying me for 4 hours this morning.
Always a pleasure, Coz. Have a lot of fun, man. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again soon.
What do you got this weekend? Holiday weekend. You got some family duties? You going to drive up to the capital city?
It'll be sheltering in place and taking walks and maybe trying to eat some good takeout.
Wow, look at you being well. You know what? Maybe I'll give you a text. I might come up to the creek. Maybe we can socially distance together and just catch up. I find that it's good for the soul to be around someone, even if we're not, you know, we're not going to be high-fiving. But John Dickinson breaks.
We'll sanitize.
There you go. Exactly. John Dickinson, Jim Cosimore, in for Joe Lowe and Dibs. They're back next week. Bonte, Steiny, Guru, on the way. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe, everybody, and enjoy your holiday weekend. You're listening to 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.